Okay. Sorry for being a bit late. Always you start doing something quick and then it's not so. And so let's continue in electronics. So, okay, this we could have done before the break, but anyway, so we have talked about tunneling in this scanning tunneling microscope and also putting electrons to this quantum dot. And what is actually mean by tunneling? So basically it's walking through the walls. You just go there through that. It doesn't hurt and you are not killed. And there's no hole in the wall after that. So this of course doesn't happen because every particle, if I would of me, if I go through this wall, I have to tunnel at the same time, and the possibility is zero. And I will get hurt. But if you go to nanoscale, this possibility comes really big. If you think one electron, and now if you think not hard wall, so hard wall would mean that the potential goes to infinite, like we had in the box. We had the hard walls, but now potential goes to some finite number. So you have some probability to go in. And if you have wave function here, and your particle arrives, you have some certain wave function describing your particle, it starts to go exponentially down inside the potential barrier. Because actually, your particle cannot exist at this level, because your potential is higher. But it can virtually exist there because your wave function decays exponential. So if it would be infinite wall here, going up and of course coming down, then this would go down very fast. And your particle doesn't go in. But now since it's a finite value here, your particle has certain decay time. And you might have some amplitude left, and your barrier ends. This means that this amplitude survives. So this is your probability to go through, just fly through the potential barrier. And this is quantum mechanical tunneling. And there's no counterpart in classical physics. Okay, we discussed a little bit of resistors. Let's discuss the other basic electrical component, which is capacitor. This kind of thing, if you open your computer, you see many of these, or whatever electrical device nowadays. And what it is, it's just actually two plates, metallic plates separated from each other. In this case, you can store energy and take it back. Like in a resistor, you have resistance, you reduce the current, but you cannot get it back. Here you can store and get it back. So this is a symbol of that if you draw. It is exactly two plates. And there's no connection directly. So if you put a current from here, it doesn't go here. It only works for basically alternating current. So basically, but if you think now just a direct current here, so if you put voltage, so that this is a plus side, you accumulate plus charge in this plate, and in a negative part, a negative charge. And this, it always balances so that these charges are equal. That's kind of automatic in electronics. It goes like that. And then you have your total charge stored. And if you divide that by the voltage you get a capacitance of your capacitor. And this capacitance means exactly how much charge you can store with some voltage. How much charge per voltage. So it's kind of a capacitance of your storage room. How big room you have. And now if you have here a charge, you can calculate the energy of that. And this is, it reminds actually the kinetic energy. So it's a half, it's a half times in a kinetic energy it would be MV. So actually this doesn't remind us. Let's not have a let's not take that as a best formula. So it's a, basically it's your charge times the voltage. This comes in electrostatics, if you study that. And basically now if you put Q here, it's Q is a V times C. If you put that in, then you come to the formula which resembles the kinetic energy. So it's half times C times V squared. So voltage is now the speed, and your capacitance is the mass, which is kind of equivalent units here. Also, of course, you can put a C like that, and then you come to this Q squared over C, whatever formula you want to use. What unit you know, you select the formula by that, but it's easy to remember by that because it's kind of like a kinetic energy. So this is a basic, you can store that kind of units, and then if you take this battery away, you can take that energy out. You can use it as a battery in that case, and until it runs out of charge. Why we talk about that is that if we make this kind of tunnel charge, so you have a kind of capacitance, and you calculate. So if you take it, for example, 100 nanometer. So this is a capacitance with 100 nanometer disks, diameter disks, and certain separation. So you can calculate its capacitance. So its capacitance, if you calculate how it's related to the dimensions, is basically it's this, so it's a area divided by dielectric constant times d distance. So well, let's forget this now. Let's concentrate on area. And if you plug these numbers in for this kind of small area, and for example, few nanometer distance, what you get is a femtofarad. So farad is a unit of capacitance. You get a femtofarad. And if you calculate the energy, this is the last formula from a previous slide. And now we calculate the energy of putting in one electron. So if you remember here, it was charge squared over C and half in front. Now this charge is one electron. So it's E, which is electron charge, squared over 2C. And now if you put this femtofarad there, it comes quite a big because your denominator is very small. So the energy comes big. And this is actually comparable to the thermal energy of 1 Kelvin. Which means that if you take a temperature below 1 Kelvin, your energy of putting electron in to the device is higher than is available as a thermal energy. So it doesn't go there. You can make a trick to put it there, and you can see when it goes in. So you can see single electrons. It means that your starting energy really not restart the computer. Nice. So the starting energy should be higher than the thermal energy, and then you start to see single electron effects. And as we now calculated that this is kind of easy to fabricate, 100 nanometer is still quite big. You can make it even smaller. But already in that scale, if we can go small enough temperatures, you can see single electrons. So that's why, for example, here we have a possibility to go to 7 millikelvin, which is certainly below that. There you can start to see it on already. And then your device, we can call it, if you have a thin enough layer, let's say 1 nanometer, then you have a tunneling happening and you have basically so-called tunnel junction, where this is the symbol. So it's like a capacitance, you are charging it by putting charge there, but still you have a possibility to tunnel through, which usual capacitance don't have. If you get current through regular capacitance, then you get smoke also. Here it happens automatically. And the usually the resistance is, it's a double times this Landauer one-dimensional resistance. It comes from the same reason, so that's why the number. So this was very kind of a rough calculation that we can go to this kind of limit. The charging energy from a single electron is higher than the thermal energy. And now let's operate in that region. So let's make this called single electron box. So here we have a capacitance, and then we have a tunnel junction, which is also a capacitance, and then we have a voltage source. So this just means that tunneling is not possible here, but it's possible here. So this has a thicker insulating layer, nothing more. So tunneling is basically not possible anymore. And then you can calculate the total capacitance of this box. So in the middle, you have an island or box, which is not connected to any of these leads, because it's capacitance, you have an insulating layer between. Here you can add electrons by tunneling, but it's still not connected as a metallic connection. And now, if you think that your box is isolated, it means that you have certain number of electrons. It can be 5,300,022, whatever number, we don't know that, we don't care. But we can see that we added one. What is the original number of electrons? That we cannot know. And the total charge is a number of electrons times the electron charge. And is again behaving in a funny way. But so we have N times electron charge, and then we have a gate charge. So this is, if you go a couple of slides back, this is exactly, the charge is C times V. So this is kind of charge, how much you put in this gate. You generate some gate charge there, and this is kind of polarization charge. So this is continuous, but this can change only one electron at a time, because you can only tunnel in or out. And there's not like tunneling half electron here. That's not possible. Yes?
Why the capacitance is the sum of two capacitance, because they are connected to series?
Yeah, this is a usual question. I was thinking that a long myself some years ago also. But the thing is, if you think, when you're calculating this kind of capacitance, saying, you don't take this into account, so this is sorted. And if you think now it's a capacitance of the box, so you have to think capacitance between this point and at this point. And if you take them like that, they are actually parallel. You agree or not? That is a reason, because it's a kind of a capacitance of this box or island. So it's capacitance from here to here, and then you have this road and this road, and they are parallel. Yes, so that's a reason. Yeah, so anybody knowing in electronics knows that this is a parallel connection, and serial connections would have a more difficult formula, but that's not actually, we don't need to care about that. You anyway can calculate it, but this is a correct way to calculate it. It's a parallel between these two points. And now, if you take you know your total charge inside your box, if you calculate the charging energy of your box by that charge, so your box has a total capacitance of this, so it's a charge squared divided by 2 times total capacitance. Same formula again. We are not using any other formula. And now it comes like that. Now if you think that you have a certain amount of electrons, so n is, for example, 0. So what is this? Is this unit squared divided by some constant. So it's a parabola. If you start to increase your gate voltage, this is your control, what you can do. Capacitance you cannot change, it's fabricated, it's a constant. But voltage you can increase. And so it's basically voltage squared divided by some constant. So it has a parabola. So your energy starts from a, I would like to have a pointer. Why doesn't this give me a pointer? Left hand is much better than the right hand. Now I don't know what's happening here on a computer, but let's continue. So you have a parabola. And nobody in the online will see it if I don't use a pen. Okay, it's totally crashed. Good. Yeah, nothing works. Arista is recording also, so welcome back to this short break provided by University IT support. And what we have here, okay. We defined, I also lost all my drawings, so you don't get them afterwards anymore. Sorry for that. Last time I stored them, but okay, the most important parts are coming. So we define the total charge of a box. It's a parallel connection of these two capacitances, so some of them. Then you have a total charge inside the system, which is number of electrons times electron charge, and then you have this gate charge. And if you calculate the system energy, it basically is that if you fix n, for example, 0, you have this parabola here rising. And now, if you fix n to 1, you have a different parabola. Because basically your zero point changes. So now you have this parabola. And then you put n to 2, you have the next one, n to 3, and you have a next one. So these are all kind of energy surfaces when you have a certain number of electrons. Now you don't know your number of electrons. But if you put your gate voltage to 0, you are more probably here. And this 0 means that it's this arbitrary number of what they happen to be. But these are kind of number of extra electrons. Let's put it this way. Then you start to increase your gate voltage. What happens? You increase energy, go along this parabola, and here your energy is higher than this parabola. And what happens? You jump here. You drop down to the lowest possible energy. As always said, the system goes to the lowest possible energy. And what happens here when you go from this parabola is one electron tunnels in, because then you are in this parabola. And then the second electron tunnels in, and you go in this way, first electrons, fourth electron, and so on. So when you increase your gate voltage, you can put one electron in. And if you measure this, it actually goes exactly like that. So that's why, so there is a number of electrons here. And of course, in a zero temperature, this is ideal. You tunnel and you have an X number of electrons. But if your temperature is more than a zero Kelvin, so you have some temperature, it smears out. And if you come to room temperature, you have basically just a line, nothing else. But if your temperature is below the charging energy, then you can see the effect. So that's why this is called single electron box. You can put electrons in a box one at a time. And you can see that single electron. If you make it a little bit more complicated, so you put two tunnel junctions, what is the difference now? So you have basically a single electron box here, but you have one extra tunnel junction coming in. What makes it now different is that you can actually put a current through here. And inside the box or island, basically you have the same box, you have a charging state depending on how many electrons you have. These are the same parabolas. But since we have only a one-dimensional plot, so this is just a tip of a parabola. And now what you have here outside, so here you have a metal, here and here you have a metal. So metal have all possible states filled until Fermi level. And let's say pen. So this is basically Fermi level. And you have all these states are filled with electrons, and all above are empty. And now you can basically have a current, so you can have an electron tunneling from here to here, and then to the empty space. And then next electron comes, you have a current. But then you have this gate voltage, which we didn't explicitly put it in. You get a similar formula here for energy. So you have a U is now n times, or it's this actually, yeah. There is a number of electrons here, n. And then you have this gate voltage. But then you have also bias voltage, because you have more voltages. But basically you can tune this, and the bias voltage is between, voltage between this point and at this point. And now if you think you get this kind of behavior, but let's try to draw it. Would be more. So let's think a case So this is a tunneling barrier. Then we have these charging states, which correspond to different number of electrons. And then we have a voltage between this point and this point. What? This number of electrons. So here n is 0, n is 1, and so on. So how many electrons? These are these parabols. They are at the different energies. So here you have an energy, and this is just a space where you are. This is a one lead, and this is a lead, and this is another. And you have a tunnel junction, actually. Oops. So this ball is your tunnel junction. And this is an island in the middle. And you can have a 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on electrons inside. Now you have a current going, because here you have a electrons, they are all filled. You can take one electron from here and jump in, and then you can take electron away again to this, because these are empty states above this line. As I mentioned, we have also the gate voltage. So this is this extra voltage, what was also in the box, how we controlled it. And now we can change the situation. So that let's lift this a little bit up. So we have the same situation. I try to put them on the same position. Maybe my drawing skills fail, but they should be same than there. But now we have a little bit lifted these stairs in the middle. And somehow in my drawing, the spacing becomes bigger. It was not intention. So we left it up. Do we have a current? Yes or no? You have 50-50 chance to say correct. Yeah, it is harder because you would need to jump up. You can also take an electron from here to here, but then you don't have empty space. So you would need again to jump up. And if you are at a zero temperature, you don't have energy to jump up. So you don't have a current. Yeah. So you don't have a current. But then you make this again higher. You lift this up. So next position by applying gate voltage. All of these move same amount. Now you suddenly have again current. And you can imagine if you make these separation much bigger than this separation, there's always some stage which you can use for current. So this kind of behavior only happens when you have this spacing smaller than this. Then it's possible to make a situation then you don't have any states there. And this gives rise to this behavior. So here is your, this is your gate voltage, and this is your bias voltage. So if you have a small bias voltage, you have a current only when certain gate voltages. But then you have a high enough bias voltage, so total voltage, then you start to have a current everywhere. Because you always find some state between. But if you operate in a small enough bias voltage, so this is exactly where you can control your current by the gate voltage. So that's a transistor based on a single electron. And every time you go from this point, no thanks. Hey, Jesus, what happened? Come on. Probably the last time I'm using this computer. Okay. I hope you got the idea. It's pretty simple to think like that without formulas. So in a green case, you have a current because you have one state available. So here's the electrons you can tunnel in, and then you can tunnel out to the empty space. But in a red case, you don't have anything because here you can tunnel in electron, but you cannot tunnel out because hopping upwards is not allowed. You don't have energy. Or you cannot tunnel to the next state because you don't have energy. If you are thinking of zero temperature. And of course, if you are not in a zero temperature, as you never are, things are a little bit smeared out. But behavior is still there. Okay, so now we assume regular material, big pieces of material, not anymore these small islands. But you can think there's anyway some lattice, some periodic lattice. And you can think distance between each atom also as a box. So you have similar states, like we now had in a particle in a box state in the previous one. Or we have a pure electron states like that. And now if you think different directions in your lattice, so you have a certain lattice. Don't mind this messy picture. I don't understand it either, so don't worry. I understand the meaning of that, but how to calculate it exactly. It comes from some fancy calculation. But if you think this as a box, you get certain energies. But then you can also think this as a box, you get certain energies, or something like that, you get certain energies. Depending on the direction you are moving, you get a different box and different particle in the box energies. And if you calculate all these different directions, that's why the symbols, you get this kind of a stage. So it varies as a function of a direction. And this is kind of, you can think this is a momentum, different momentum. The electron is moving in a different direction. And you have a different energy stage. And it comes complicated. Sometimes very complicated. But if you look the general picture, you can see that between these areas, you always find with some momentum a state. Here you don't find with any x value. This is a gap. So there's no possible states. Here again you find in this blue area, you find at every energy you find possible state with certain k, and k is a momentum. And then there's a gap again. So you, if you don't mind about this k vector or momentum direction, then you have certain bands allowed, and then you have certain gaps between. This is exactly where the material properties come from. You can derive it from this particle in the box picture, and do all the calculations, you get the band structure, and then you can forget that, because electrons easily scatter. They easily change the direction. So they easily move also from this point to another point here in the same band. But they don't easily jump from here to here, because then you need all this energy at the one time. And this comes to the same picture Kaisa already showed you. So you have a Fermi level, which means that all the energy electron states are filled till that, and then above that all states are empty. And if you are inside a big gap, so you all electrons are here and they need a lot of energy to tunnel, not to tunnel, to jump from here to here. This means that they don't move easily. That's the insulator. Because to move easily, you need empty spaces, empty states near you. Then you can change the direction easily. And here, all states are filled. You cannot change the state. And to change the state, you have to go all the way here. So you need all this energy, so they don't move. That's the insulator. In a metal, your Fermi level is not in a gap, or you don't have a gap at all. So you have always states available. So you can electron can easily scatter and it conducts. And semiconductor is something between. You have a gap less than 1.5 electron volts. So this means that at the room temperature, there's always some electrons excited here. But if you go to zero temperature, it's an insulator. But at the room temperature, it's a little bit conducting. Then, in a semiconductor, so this is kind of simplified picture. It's always in a reality, it should be in a 3D, but this is 2D version. So you have silicon atoms, which are covalently bound to each other. And in a covalent bond, you make this electron pair. So they are all bound, these electrons, to this pair. So that's why you have this energy gap. You can do the similar band structure calculation for this also, and it gives the same answer. But now you can increase the number of electrons by putting, for example, arsenide there. It has 5 electrons instead of 4. So one electron is extra, and it's not bound to the bond. So this is a free electron then. So you have extra electrons. This means that your conduction band has some electrons which are easily scattering, easily conducting. You can do same way, other way around. So you can put gallium, which has a free electrons instead of 4, which means that the one bond is missing an electron. And then it can be filled electron from the next bond, and that can be filled from the next one. And what is actually happening is that you're kind of moving a positive charge. This hole is moving, because one of electrons is always like a filling the hole, and then the hole moves. Kind of. So you can think this as a positive charge moving, if you think as a hole is moving. And now the biggest invention in the semiconductor industry is a so-called p-n junctions. And I forgot to mention that this doping was called n-type doping, because you increase negative charge, n like a negative charge, because you put extra electrons. Here you increase p-type doping, so you increase positive charge by taking away an electron. It is the same thing than inserting a hole. It has a positive charge. So it's a funny way to think this hole as a positive charge moving, but you can really do all the physics by that. And the p-n junction means that you have a junction of these two types. So n-type is here. N-type semiconductor wire. So you have positive voltage here, negative voltage here, which means that your electrons are going this direction and the current is flowing opposite, as we already mentioned. Then you have a p-type semiconductor, meaning you have the same voltage, but now your positive holes are going this direction. It's the same direction as the current. Now you put a p-type here and an n-type here. So you make a connection, p-n junction. What is happening now? If you put positive voltage here, your holes are coming to this junction. Also, your electrons are moving this direction, coming to the junction. What happens in the junction? Electron goes to hole, and they both disappear. There's no more extra electron and no more hole. And you can, if you have a voltage source here, you can feed this forever, and you have a current flowing. But if you put it other way around, your positive charges are disappearing from a junction, and they are not generated there from nothing. Also, your extra electrons are moving away. So you get this kind of empty area, which is no doping at all, and basically that's a high resistance. You have no current. So that's a diode. Current goes only one direction and not to another. And basically all the transistor and everything is based on this nowadays. So this is kind of your unit, what you need to do anything. And of course, you can induce electron hole pairs here. And if you induce electron hole pairs, you make a hole here, an electron here, then you have a little bit current. How can you make electron hole pair? Any ideas? You certainly need to take an electron from a valence band to a conduction band. But how can you give that energy? Yeah, heating, of course. But that's not a very efficient way here. Because this is the biggest industry now already in the world. I don't know if it's the biggest, but one of the biggest. Photon. If a photon hits here, this area, it generates easily. It easily have the same energy than a band gap, and your electron is moved from a valence band to a conduction band, and then you have a hole here, an electron here, and you generate hole and an electron, which then moves again and gets a current. And then you get the photons from the sun. So this is actually solar cell. This is exactly how the silicon solar cell works. And in teamwork, you can make a see how the other type of chemical solar cell works, but the silicon solar cells work in a simple idea like that. You just generate electron hole pairs here and you generate current by that. Yeah, so summary of electronics, so charge is quantized and electrons are based to discrete energy levels. So this was this particle in the box. Electrons can tunnel, and then there was this single electron transistor, which is on and off every time you add an electron. So basically, when you speed your gate voltage, you add every time one electron, and you get a burst of current. Unless you have a bias current high enough, then you have always current, which is not interesting. You should have a low bias current. Let's go a little bit smaller. let's go molecular electronics. And then you use a molecule as an electronic component. This can be like a, yeah, macromolecules, of course, carbon nanotubes, some bigger one, biomolecules like a DNA, if you can make them conducting very well. Then, of course, supramolecules, but usually the regular molecules, which are like a 1 nanometer, they are not, they are a little bit too difficult to handle. But usually the supramolecules from 1 to 10 nanometer are often used, and usually the aim is to get it self-assembled. So this is the idea. The point is just to put a molecule as a conductor or active transistor. Yeah, it's a nice idea. But why would you do that? Because then you can make a self-assemble to make these millions of transistors by self-assemble. That would be kind of an aim and benefit for this. So history. These guys in the 70s, they made fancy molecule with an impossible name. You can read it, but the structure of a molecule is something like that. And now if you make a connection to here and here, this end, and I put voltage, you get exactly nothing on a negative voltage, and in a positive voltage, after a certain threshold, you have a huge current. So this is exactly the diode. Same than a PN junction. And from a PN junction, you can fabricate whatever. First of all, transistor, and then you connect these transistors. You get a processor or anything. So this is kind of a first molecular component. This is basically all you need. I don't know actually how they came up to this structure. Trial and error, maybe. Maybe they had a nice idea why should that work. But it actually took a long time. Yeah, we can look why it works, but it took a long time after that before next possible candidate for molecular electronics. And if you think that you can divide this molecule as a donor part, so it easily gives away one electron. Some chemists would explain also me why this gives easily electron away. It's some chemical reason, which guys have probably discussed already. I know that they exist and they easily give electron away, but what is the chemical structure of this kind of donor? For example, this. And then you have acceptor, which easily takes an electron. So basically, the basic state of this molecule is so that this has given electron to this part. So that's why this is negatively charged and this is positively charged. And then you have this biconjugated system, which is easily conducting. And that's basically it. That's your molecule. And if you make energy diagram, so this is exactly what we just draw for single electron transistor. Now we have it in the case of molecule. In a single electron transistor, we have in the middle part, we have this equally spaced ladder. It was because of a charging energy of one electron. Now we don't have that ladder because our molecule is so small that if we add one electron, the distance between this ladder is too high in this picture. But we have this molecular state. So we have highest occupied molecular orbit and lowest unoccupied molecular orbit. And at the very beginning, you have an electron here, and this is missing one electron. And if you put the bias this way, that you increase the Fermi level here, or you put positive voltage here, it very easily drops from this A to here, because it's kind of downwards. You lose energy. You can easily give energy away, thermal energy. The electron goes here, and from here, it can jump to the empty spaces above the Fermi level. And then what happens after that? So this is like your electron jumps, and then you can easily feel it from here again, and this electron goes away, and then you're back in where you start. Then the electron drops again, and so on. So electrons go from here to here. So here you feel from M means metal, so you take an electron from metal or to give an electron away to the metal. But if you put the bias other way around, what happens first if you increase this so that because here it matches to the empty stage. It should be actually a little bit above this level. But now if you put other way around, so this goes down, this goes up, you would need to put electron here to here. Okay, that happens easily because it is missing one electron, as we noticed, because it's a donor. So you make it zero charge. And here you can easily, because this goes down, you can easily take this electron out to here. So that happens. So you put one electron here and an electron out here. But then after that, this electron should go up here. And it's again uphill. You should take an energy somewhere, and this is not easy. So it's kind of forbidden, and this doesn't happen. So you don't have a current because it's blocked immediately. And of course, this measurement has been done also in a low temperature. But in this case, the energy differences are higher, so you can actually almost see this in a room temperature. Single electron transfer, you don't. So this is why it works. Then it was 90s, the next molecule. This looked like something like that. Then you have a fancy fabrication thing. You have silicon nitride thin membrane where you drill a small hole and evaporate cold and leave the molecules in between. This already needs several steps in the microfabrication we talked in a previous lecture. But finally, you get your molecule there between, and it's something like that. And it shows the same kind of behavior, like a diode, unless it drops after certain voltage. So something breaks down, or you have a tunneling happening, or. So not so nice behavior. But after that, there has been exponential growth of studies of the molecular electronics to make a diode. Okay, so this you talked a little bit in Kaiser's lecture, I think. Carbon hybridization. So you can have this sp hybridization, which is like a triple bond, or sp3, so you have all four bonds, so you make a diamond-like structure from a carbon. Or you can have sp2, which is like a double bond and a triple bond. So if you think of carbon structure, you can make this kind of conjugated system. There, every second is a kind of a double bond, and every second is a single bond. So this is kind of sp2 system, sp2 hybridization. So you have this 120 degree between the bonds. So that's why you draw it like that. But it's actually not so that it every second is a double and every second is a single, because it's not well defined where the double is, because it's exactly the same energy if you move them one. So, and if you move them again one, you can basically think that you have moved electron from one bond to the next bond, to the next bond, to the next bond. Other way to think it is that when you make this sp2 hybridization, you have this kind of pi orbitals sticking out. Now, if you put your carbon atoms next to each other, they start to overlap and they make this kind of a long bond, long molecular orbital through the whole wire. These are kind of two different pictures just to explain the same idea. The result in both pictures is that it conducts. So this is so-called conjugated system. There you can find it in a graphene. You all know already graphene, so famous that everybody has heard it and have seen this. So it is honeycomb-like structure. And how you make it is actually that you can just take a scotch tape to a graphite and peel slices, and maybe one of those will be single. It's a little bit of luck. You can also make it chemical vapor deposition. I can actually put some extra material of that to the model. So with sp2 bonded honeycomb lattice, 1.4 angstrom is a bond distance for there. It's really strong. If you think it, how much you have a material there. Of course, you can break it easily because it's all tiny. But if you compare to them, how much material you have and how much force you need to break it, it is actually really strong. Nearly transparent, also efficient heat conductor, also efficient electrical conductor. Now, if you make even more complicated band structure calculation, you can make it 3D plot. So this is your conduction band, and this is like a gauge space. So all these different directions means different velocity in a different direction. So this is like what we had a seed earlier, and then you had these funny symbols there in the x-axis. So this was this kind of spread out. But if you keep it as a 3D, it looks like that. And as you can see, there's a band gap. There's a band gap. There's no stage here between valence band and conduction band. So that's a semiconductor. But in a certain direction, you don't have a band gap. And this one point. If your electron moves in that direction, it can move freely, like metal. So it depends what direction the electron is moving, how the material is behaving. But of course, as I said, that electrons can easily scatter, change the directions. So this means that the graphene is well conducting, because you always find one of these directions where you can move, and it's like a metal. So you have a really good conductivity. But the thing is that here you have a funny thing that you have this band structure is like linear. Usually you have some kind of waviness and some kind of bending. And if you think about your mass of your electron or mass of your hole which is moving, the mass is actually second derivative of this band structure. The tighter bending, the more heavier electron you have. It's not really gaining mass, but effectively. And now in this case, you have a linear. So you kind of have electrons without mass. And you actually, to explain everything, you have to use general relativistic behavior. But let's not go there, but that's why it's interesting. And now, if you think carbon nanotubes, that's kind of, you have a roll graphene. And you know the carbon nanotube can be metallic, semiconductor, or insulating, depending on how you roll it. And why is that? When you take carbon nanotube, you roll your graphene, you make a box. Again, the carbon nanotube is like 1 or 2 nanometers. So you make 1 nanometer box. It means that your electron states are quantized. Not every electron state is anymore possible, but only those allowed by the box, which we already saw earlier. Now, if this direction or any of these happens to be allowed in that box, yeah, it's a very good conductor. It's a metallic. If these are not allowed, and only these are allowed, for example, this highest, then it's an insulator. And of course, you can have some, yeah, nice. What now happens? Okay, this is really behaving badly today. I really don't understand anymore what's happening. Okay. No. Okay, maybe I don't touch the screen, then it works. And if you get some of these not so high band gaps allowed, then it's a semiconductor. So that's basically the reason why you have different carbon nanotubes. So let's skip these. But then you have a molecule system. There you have a highest occupied molecular orbit and lowest unoccupied molecular orbit. And you have a band gap between them. It's a similar than in a semiconductor. In a semiconductor, you can do n-doping. You can induce more electrons here. You can do that also in a molecule. You take one of these famous, what we discussed, donor groups. It gives easily electron. Then you have extra free electron. And you don't need to pass this band gap to have this electron moving. Also, you can do p-doping. So you take your electrons away, so you make a hose. Same, you can make in a molecule. So you get a, put an acceptor group, which takes one extra electron, beams it to itself. Then you have a similar situation. You have a hole in your molecule system. This was actually a Nobel Prize idea in 2000. So if you want to make now really well-designed p-n chunks, you can do it so that you take a, so this is biconjugated system. So you have a band chain which is biconjugated, and here you also have a single, triple, single system, so which is conjugated. So this is all conductive. You have free electrons basically because you have this big pi orbitals overlapping. Also here, then you have a little bit insulating barrier, so you don't very easily change electrons, but you can tunnel. Then you put a donating group here. I shouldn't touch the screen anymore. You put a donating group here, and it gives a one extra electron here. So this is actually like a negative n-type doping. And you put a acceptor. Yeah, acceptor group here, which takes one electron from this part. So then you have a p-type doping. So you have a p-n junction. And then you connect it to metal, for example, by sulfur bond, thiol bonding, which we discussed earlier. Then you basically have a p-n junction on a molecular level, and it works. And if you make the same kind of energy diagrams, you can see that if you put this direction, opposite direction voltage, you don't have any chance for electrons to tunnel in because there's no empty levels here. Here you can, yeah, not nothing here either. Here you can put electron in, but then it doesn't go anywhere, because it would need to go upwards, and here you have anyway empty field state, so it cannot go. So you actually cannot find any road for electrons to go either way. But here, if you put here positive voltage and here negative voltage other way around, then you can put electrons easily from here. Right. To this empty state here, and then from here to here, and here to the empty state. So you have electron flowing all the time, and you have a current. So by same kind of diagrams, you can see that this works. And actually, if you compare this to this original invention, it is actually pretty similar idea. So maybe they had an idea of that time already, but I don't know then why did it take 20 years to get the next one working. So maybe they didn't have an idea. Or you can make a single electron transistor by molecule. So here you have a conjugated system, and then you have a tile connection to the gold, and tile is kind of a tunneling barrier. So you have your island as a molecule, and then you have your tunneling barrier as a tile group. Then you have a use same as a single electron transistor. So you have a source, and then you have tunneling, and then you have a molecule tunneling away, and then you have your drain. And you can see the similar behavior as a single electron transistor. Okay, so how much we have actually time? We have used time for fighting with a computer. Let's see, maybe this is kind of the easiest part. Anyway, so how you measure, not in practice, this is the hardest part in practice, but in a lecture, because this is just back to the fabrication thing. How you measure single molecule? You cannot just put your multimeter there and measure. And one of the most used method is so-called Bragg junction. It actually sounds really rough, and it is, because it's a 90% of luck. But basically, you make a thin wire, you start to bend it until it cracks, and then you put it slowly back and hope you get one molecule. The thing is that you should do this repeatedly many times and all the time, every time you record your current through it. So that's why you get a huge statistics. So you can get it to 1 kilohertz repetition rate. So you get 1,000 measurements in a second. Then you make a histogram and so on, and then you get your results. And if you have a clever enough, you make a system so that you can stop when you have a molecule there, then you maybe measure that single molecule for a longer time. So there's actually fabricated system, SCM image. So this is usually that you have silicon substrate, and you fabricate it a little bit floating, like here, and then you start bending your substrate. And this breaks up here. You can do tricks to help your molecule to get there. We talked about self-assembled monolayers. So you can cover your gold wire with this kind of self-assembled monolayer, for example, here, this kind of molecules. And then very quickly, when it breaks up, the monolayer will cover every both ends, and then you come back, you can easily connect one of these molecules between. So this happens much higher probability than just waiting for molecule to accidentally go there, because you always have one molecule there. So this is a little bit improved method. One thing is to use a scanning tunneling microscope. So in this case, people use similar idea of self-assembled monolayer. So they put this kind of carbohydrate tails to cover everything, not to have a connectivity. But here and there, they put some molecules with a good conductivity, and these molecules are a little bit higher. So you can see them as a bumps in your STM picture. Then you are taking picture and you will see bump, okay, there's a molecule, and you put your needle down and measure that molecule. This is much more systematic and nice, more controlled way. So you measure from STM tip to molecule and then to the substrate. This is one way. Also, in the AFM tip, there has been a lot of emitting of a DNA molecule, for example, between two electrodes. And then you put your tip as a first electrode and you measure current here through the DNA molecule, and then you can vary the distance. How far you put the tip, you get a conductivity as a function of distance, and you can deduce from that what kind of conductivity you have. Do you have just tunneling between the bases, or do you have a real charge moving and so on? This was actually one of the nicest way to measure conductivity. So this is combining the STM and the brake junction. So you take a gold surface, for example, this table, golden table, and then you have a golden tip, and then you start tapping. Every time you connect, the gold little bit melts together because gold is pretty soft, and then you take it away. You make this kind of channel bridge of a gold atoms. And this is kind of 1D conducting channel. It's as close as ideal 1D conducting channel as possible. Chain of atoms. And now, when you start to take your tip out, you are all the time measuring your conductivity. So you have a constant voltage, so you measure current, which you can transport and change to a conductivity. And when you take a tip out, you can see this kind of plateau. So this is a distance, and this is a current or conductivity, which is basically the current. And you increase the distance, you see, you increase the distance. So this is zero distance, so you have some high conductivity because you are touching. But then you take it away, it drops to the three times of this elementary conductivity channel, what we derived earlier. And then it drops to two times of that, so you break one atom chain. First you have three of them, then you have two, then you have only one, and then zero. So you see also the quantized conductivity here. But now, on top of that, you have molecules there lying around. So you are doing this in a liquid, actually. And these molecules are just floating there randomly. Now, if you zoom here, so basically you shouldn't have any more. Here you have one. Come on. one channel or chain of gold atoms, and there you have no more. So you cannot, you don't more have this even with one conductivity quantum. But if you zoom in, I forgot to mention that this plot is actually that you take this histogram of all these values. So you don't care about the distance anymore. You see how many hits you got at this point, how many hits you got here. Here you got a lot because you had a plateau. So that's why you get a peak there. And this means that you are at some of these positions where you have only two hits. So basically you make a histogram, so you see this 1, 2, and 3 conductance quantum. Now at the here very end, you see also a little bit this kind of steps. They are much more random. It's not very easy to see, but if you make a histogram, you see that they are equally spaced, these peaks. So this means that you have one molecule, two molecule, three molecules connecting between your tip and the surface. If you don't have a molecule, it's just no more steps here. And the histograms look like that. So you can measure the connectivity of a single molecule by that. Yeah, then there's a fancy things. You can make a plasma edge ratio carbon nanotube, put chemical bonds and connect your molecule there. Also, this is one of you make a Napi nano imprint lithography, this kind of rotaxyl molecule, which Kaisa talked a lot, I think. And then you can make a matrix out of that. So you have a here electrode and here another electrode, and you can put voltage. And the idea is to move this rotaxyl from one end, one position to another, and use it as a memory. And it worked. Except a few years later, they realized that actually the rotaxyl is not moving, that they are charging something. But it still worked. I think this is a point to end. We have finally this computer now. Not enough. Sorry about that.